Hey everyone, welcome in to another daily editorial here on the KE Report, chatting with Chris Temple, founder and editor of The National Investor. Chris, let's focus on currencies right now, starting with the euro. The euro has rebounded fairly nicely after all that craziness back in March and is currently sitting about 1.13 compared to the dollar. This is, with the euro's rise, obviously, making the dollar fall, continue to fall, actually, on the dollar index because of how heavily weighted towards the euro that index is. But we also had some news out of the ECB. They're discussing an increase to their pandemic bond buying program. They're saying that they're going to do everything they can to support the European economies. It's a bit of a push and pull here, whether you think that a central bank producing more money actually is good for the currency, but I don't know, on the back of that announcement, apparently it is today. Give us a little insights on what you think is causing the euro to rise.
I'm glad you added that part at the end, Corey, because this is something that especially a lot of the dyed-in-the-wool gold bugs and their leaders, you know, those Pied Pipers, just don't understand. I've commented before that a lot of these people are using arguments for gold that are 40 years old. It's not an accident that the euro is screaming higher today after the European Central Bank announced another gazillion dollars of stimulus. Just like for much of this year, until just recent days again, when it stepped back down to the lower part of its channel, the U.S. dollar was holding up despite the Fed and the government coming out. Things do not work like they did in the 70s, folks. Start to understand that. The currency traders right now are interested in two things. Number one, just momentum right now, and for the last couple weeks, that favors the euro. And to that extent, and as a momentum trade, it's more a story in recent days of euro strength more than it is dollar weakness. And the other thing being that they're wondering about whether things are going to hold together or fall apart. And that is the underlying question that has been with us for a decade now, where the euro specifically is concerned. You know, the currency traders are going to push the euro up if they print up all kinds of new money, if it means that the eurozone is not going to fall apart and that they're going to have something to hang their hat on long term as far as the euro is concerned. Now, look, with the euro getting up right now, very near its peak in March, I'll say it again. I've said it before. I'll say it again. You got to be nuts to have anything to do with Europe long term, because they are still going down today, notwithstanding the same road that Japan has gone down. But this is what means something today, folks. When central banks and governments print all of this money, it doesn't always mean that the currency weakens, either against its rivals or against gold, either one. So that's what matters. You know, what'll be interesting to see in coming days is whether you have a significant enough break in this two-year upward trend for the U.S. dollar that, fundamentals notwithstanding, currency traders pile on. I guarantee you the European Central Bank isn't going to like it if the euro starts going up a lot and hurts their economy even worse. We'll worry about that when the time comes. But this is a pivotal place, and especially if these currency moves were to extend themselves, even as the stock market stays levitated, and perhaps risk assets get even more of a bid, because above all else, and I've said this for months, you'll know that the deflationary fears in the world are over when the U.S. dollar's back finally is broken. Then might be the time that you'll even get me interested in silver and copper and cyclicals and things like that, whereas at the moment, I don't trust any of those.
Fair enough. It just seems like a hard trade to go all in on saying that the dollar's going to crash when, yeah, fair, the euro's bouncing, but what's it bouncing on? It's hard to actually say. And again, central banks are just printing money, so I don't know. For me, I still struggle with that whole collapse of the U.S. dollar right now, because there just isn't a good alternative. But when it comes to the balance of money printing from central banks, fine, the ECB is increasing it. We hear from the Fed next week. If the Fed says, well, I assume at least, that the Fed is going to say we're going to remain easy, they might not say that they're going to be buying even more treasuries, even more bonds, corporate bonds. But what will that do to the currency? Is there a lot of eyes that need to be on what the Fed says next week for currency moves?
It could be. We just don't know because they're all full of surprises when you least expect it. So who the heck knows? I wish I had a crystal ball. I mean, by and large, I think that everything the Fed is doing is already a known quantity. I don't see them adding too much. They're tweaking a few things. They increased the types of institutions as far as state and local governments that they're going to backstop. So, you know, that's been good news for state and local governments that are underwater. You know, Illinois had to borrow a bunch of money, for example. They're one of the worst basket cases of any state in the U.S., as most people know. But as far as adding anything new, I don't see him telling the markets much of anything new when they get together, Corey, than that, you know, we're on the same course. We're going to do what it takes to keep everything afloat. But as far as any changes to their, you know, the forward outlook and the rest of this stuff, I don't see anything.
All right. Well, again, something to watch. Let's see how these currencies move. And still the euro, even after this bounce, you look at a long-term chart, it is still very much in a downtrend. But, hey, it's closing in on that upper range. Chris, let's talk about some of the stocks that you've been writing about to your subscribers. Outside of just market moves, you cover a lot of stocks in a wide range of sectors, and you have, well, for the whole time I've known you, always preach that you need to look into these story stocks and find good companies, good stories, no matter what the market is doing. What are you seeing out there in terms of opportunities?
Well, there's lots of them, Corey. I mean, one of my favorite statistics, and I've probably said this before, you know, when I've discussed these things with you, one of my favorite statistics where the stock market is concerned is that if you go back to what most people would tell you is the worst time ever to be an investor in a stock market, that being the Great Depression, from September of 1929 until April of 1932, the Dow Jones Industrial Average, which was basically the marker for the market in those days, dropped by 89% from top to bottom. It started at 380 and it bottomed at 43, rounding off the numbers. Yet during that same time, one out of every three publicly traded companies were higher in price. So I'm not saying that we're headed for an 89% decline from top to bottom in the market. The Fed will not allow that to happen. But I do believe that all of the money printing notwithstanding, that if you look at the stock market generally going forward, returns are going to be much less than they have historically been. That's your best case scenario. Furthermore, the passive investing game has been hurt dramatically. And even though you saw today, in fact, the NASDAQ 100 intraday this morning hit its all-time high from earlier this year, you're going to have a lot harder time going forward just, you know, closing your eyes and throwing money into index funds. Because even if, let's say, the NASDAQ or the S&P 500 start to do better, within that, you've got entire industries that are not coming back anytime soon. So the current environment requires more than ever that with at least some money and some of your attention, you're going to have to pick stocks and pick sectors. And so maybe we'll, you know, the overall market will do better because of all the liquidity than that one out of three. But hey, I've talked about biotech stocks lots of times, for example. And in fact, just this morning, I told my members to sell Sarepta Therapeutics, which we got back into near its low last October. So we got almost a double again on it. It has by far and away been the single most profitable recommendation I've ever made, and we've been in and out of it and changed our allocations multiple times and somewhere between 80 and 100 times our money over the years. I'm going to have to go back and do the math on it one of these days. It's just been astounding since I first discovered that company way back in the late 1990s. Right now on my list, I've got a couple of big movers of late. One is a company that is working on something very near to my heart, having three of my eight children with type 1 diabetes, one of whom we unfortunately lost at the end of last year. And this is a company that has come closer in human trials than anybody to having a functional immune response suppressed, essentially artificial pancreas, for lack of a better term. That stock has perked up a lot of late, especially after they just announced a big collaboration last week with a company that's going to help them get the rest of the way, I believe. Another one on my list is working on the Holy Grail these days for biotechs, where everybody that has thought they were close has fallen down, and that is to find a treatment for Alzheimer's disease. The company on my list, we've been in and out of it a couple of times, made a lot of money. When I first recommended this stock, it was under a buck. We were selling it near $14. Went all the way back to a dollar or two. We got back in. Now it's approaching $5. Another one of the biotechs on my list is a company that, and I've not really got caught up, although obviously if you're a trader, you could have made a lot of money on some of these vaccine kind of plays lately, a lot of which is just hype. But one of the companies on my list that was $1 a share late last year, it's now $4 and change, and I believe it's going to go way, way higher, is a company that is working on a very intractable issue that I'm sure a lot of you have heard of out there. And that is that for a lot of new bugs that are out there, the old-fashioned antibiotics just aren't doing a trick anymore. A lot of infections are acquired in hospitals. And it's before they figure out what particular single or cocktail of antibiotics to get to fight it, you're dead. So this is a major thing that a lot of biotechs have been working on. And the one that I've got on my list is, again, apparently well ahead in this, and has gotten considerable funding from BARDA for this as well. So, I mean, those are a few of the biotech ideas. One of my story stocks in medical device area, the stock price has been dead in the water. The company has kind of slowed down lately because of an inability to do some of its work over the coronavirus issue, but they're starting to pick back up. And this is a company that's got one of the best advances in optical technology in 30 or 40 years. And they're about to make a big splash when one of the people they collaborate with, which is a household name to everybody in America, they're going to be coming out with a new corporate video, and I'll be getting that out to our people. So those are just in the health area, Corey. There's a lot of cool stories out there, and it's exciting that no matter what else is going on in the markets and so forth, we're still an innovative country with a lot of great minds, a lot of great people. And it's really cool to be able to get onto some of these things before most anybody else sees them.
Well, that's the exciting thing, too, is to see some sort of timeline or some sort of an avenue that these companies can continue to grow and have a good story. You did share a lot in the health sector, let's call it. And fair enough. You know what? There are always companies and there's always money available for new advancements when it comes to people's health. But Chris, are there any sort of characteristics or qualities that you need to see in a company? We talk about management a lot, I get that, but when it comes to near-term drivers or long-term stories, is there anything that you can summarize for our listeners that they need to at least be watchful for so they can, who knows, maybe eliminate some stocks earlier on in the process?
Well, you mentioned one, management's a big deal. One of my picks in the last, a little over a year now in the gold space is management that I probably know this family better than I've ever known anybody in the resource sector. Their share price was 4 or 5 cents at the end of last year. It's been around 25 cents recently. And you heard it here first, they're going to move the decimal point one place or better in the next 12 to 24 months. And the biggest reason that I got onto that, and it's a company, frankly, Corey, and this is the importance of getting to know a few stories and a few managements and get to know them well. As I have talked to other people, even in the gold industry, about this company, that I don't know, this doesn't, maybe it'll work. All right, fine. And then, don't cry to me when the stock goes from a nickel to several dollars a share, and I tried to get you into it, and you didn't listen. So management's important. But otherwise, what's an outlier? What is going to get people out there that follow different industries or follow small caps generally? What's going to stand out? is an outlier. Okay. Who is disruptive out there? And again, the disruptive part of things is key. And this is especially key in healthcare and biotech and stuff like that. Who is going to be a company that you really can't ignore? You know, aside from that, you know, you've got, let me just use a couple other examples here. Even in an industry like lithium, I mean, the lithium sector has been on the back foot for a while with global growth under stress. You're not going to see a broad recovery anytime soon, at least not a sustainable one, until a lot of macro things get fixed. But there are two lithium-oriented companies on my list. One of them we've made a lot of money on in the past already, and I believe will again. And the reason I like them is because their lithium is not just for car batteries and things like that, but they have been in extreme northwestern Ontario. They've been putting together a resource which is starting to rival in its long-term potential the Greenbushes in Australia. And that is where the biggest deposit existing on the planet of technical grade lithium is concerned, which yes, you can use for batteries and things like that, but this is also a grade of lithium that you can use for technical applications, for the glass market, ceramics and things like that. With that kind of lithium, there is decidedly not a surplus in the world. And yet this lithium company, you know, kind of just lollygags around in share price right now, getting caught up with the rest. The other one, my more recent addition here in the U.S., is a company that has got one of the best exploration projects and infrastructure in all of North America. And I like them because, and this really applies to both of them, the theme around both of these companies, as much as anything, Corey, is going to be one that's going to affect uranium, already is. It's going to affect rare earths and a whole lot of other stuff, rare earth processing as well. And that is the move back closer to home of supply chains and the ability to produce raw materials of various kinds. So you'll remember, I'm sure, that in a friendlier moment, Pierre Trudeau's kid and our windbag down here got together and inked a deal between the U.S. and Canada to collaborate on all kinds of strategic minerals and so forth, which thankfully transcends both of them going forward. It's an economic necessity and a national and regional security thing. So I'm actually going to be looking at a couple other opportunities in that field as well of new companies I may be adding that are all going to kind of feed into that whole theme of bringing supply chains back to the U.S. specifically and to North America generally.
All right, Chris, we will wrap it up there. If anybody wants more information on some of these stocks that you are recommending, well, you do need to sign up for your newsletter, but you can also find some more information on Chris's website, which I will post a link to below this interview. Chris, thanks for your time today. Have a great rest of your day.